I've been looking forward to this interview for a very long time, and I'm thrilled to have United States Senator Mazie Hirono with us. She is the author of the new book, Heart of Fire, which chronicles her evolution from a dogged yet soft-spoken public servant into a fiery critic and advocate that we know her as today. Hers is a uniquely American story of immigrating to a new country in search of a better life and then dedicating her own life to advocating for her communities. She is not only basking in the glory of this book, but the fact that on Thursday, the United States Senate overwhelmingly passed legislation addressing a rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans. And it's a great pleasure to welcome United States Senator Mazie Hirono to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A great honor to have you on the program.
Oh, aloha, Joe.
Thank
it's
you.
It's good to be with you.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you. I love the book, and I love your story, and I just love watching you whenever you're giving them hell on Capitol Hill. So let us talk for before we get into your story, which is just incredible. Let us talk about what happened on Thursday. So this bill is your baby, right? And it passes almost unanimously. We'll get to that in a second, but almost unanimously. And that must have been just very gratifying.
It was. And, of course, a shout-out to Grace Mann because she introduced a companion bill in the U.S. House. And she and others have been strong advocates for ending these kinds of attacks, which will take more than a bill, of course. Anyhow, so when I introduced this bill, I couldn't get a single Republican to sign on to it. And as the bill hit the floor, because Chuck Schumer of New York, let's face it, so many of these kinds of crimes are on TV happening in New York. Most recently, right, a man was stomped on. And so he decided that we should fast track this. And so as the bill was being considered on the floor, I think it was hard even for Republicans to turn their eyes away from the images of these totally unprovoked attacks, not to mention the killings in Georgia, which astoundingly, the sheriff there let the perpetrator narrate his rationale, which is yet another reason why we need to pay more attention and collect data on the incidence of these crimes. So after trying to kill this bill, got this bill, even people like Ted Cruz voted for it. So it was quite the moment for the U.S. Senate.
So my
stand up and stand with the AAPI community.
So my understanding is, and correct me where I'm wrong here, which is what this bill ultimately does is assigns a point person at the DOJ, at the Department of Justice, to expedite the review of hate crimes and then work with state and local officials in response to those crimes.
That's right. And to help the state and local law enforcement set up an online way to report these crimes and incidents. There are a lot of states that do not even have hate crimes legislation. There are a lot of people who don't know what a hate crime is. And even the incidents, most recent incidents in New York, they're very careful to say, well, we don't know if this is a hate crime. Well, does the perpetrator have to yell some kind of a racial epithet for it to be deemed a hate crime? So we know this is happening, and it's really a non-controversial bill, I thought, but it took a lot of negotiations, and I particularly worked with Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, to address her concerns, and we also incorporated an important amendment by Blumenthal and Moran, again, bipartisan. So it began to pick up support, but there were over 20 amendments filed to this bill by the likes of Cruz, Lee, and some of the usual suspects.
So one of the usual suspects, Josh Hawley, was the sole no vote on this. I don't want to give him a tremendous amount of airtime because we should be celebrating this legislation and not, giving him a run for his money. But he is emblematic of the problem, right? I mean, the hate of whatever he's got going on is the reason that you need this legislation in the first place. So what does that say, number one, about the vibe, if you will, the feeling within the AAPI community of change needs to happen?
and being perpetrated by people who may perhaps have like mindsets of Senator Hawley that started this. Look, discrimination has been around for a long time. Hate has been around for a long time, but we've certainly seen a rise in it in the last few years.
Well, racism is never far below the surface in our country, Joe. And the Asians are definitely seen as the other and perpetual foreigners. And so it gives rise to passage of the Chinese Exclusion Act and the internment of 120,000 Japanese Americans in World War II, the Muslim ban, all of that. So this kind of animus against the other, never far below the surface. The AAPI community is very aware of the kind of racism that the community has, that have been directed to AAPIs all the time. It's just that it's gotten so violent now.
Yeah.
However, we know that because we passed this bill, that the hearts and minds are not going to change. I think that we need to continue to speak out. We need to do other things to prevent these kinds of actions. And, you know, how do you remove racism from people's hearts? You have to stay at it. I think education plays a part. You know, Asian studies and the what happens to minorities in our country should not be an elective. It should be taught to us as part of the core curriculum.
So the more I think about this, the more my head hurts. So help me out, Senator. Give me a lesson here. But the same people who, starting with the former president of the United States, who used terms like China virus and Kung flu, are now the same people that say you don't need to wear a mask and that you don't need to be vaccinated. Now, not all, I'm simplifying, but that's the gist. When I think about that, of saying, okay, well, it's you know, it's nothing but the common cold, and yet you should hate these people because they're giving it to you, well, my head just explodes. I don't get it.
Again, there's so much that Trump he politicized wearing a mask to the point where over 500,000 people in our country have already died, and it's amazing to me that there are still people who continue to think that somehow they're immune from this virus, as though the virus cares. The weaponizing of all of these kinds of positions, so that it becomes very tribal and contributing to the divisiveness that is in our country. It was always there, but yeah. Trump really brought it to the fore and made it okay to attack people and total strangers and be very vociferous about it. I mean, the guy, he went after everybody. He called me all kinds of names.
Oh, he certainly did. He certainly did.
Oh.
But let me.
Yeah, because.
No, go ahead.
Yes.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because that's really a part of your story in this book, is that you come into the Senate, and by your own choosing, you say, all right, well, I'll just, you know, I'll poke around, I'll do my work, and things will be fine. And then you realize that staying below the radar is pretty unsustainable, because in comes the bully. And you're the quiet person sitting in the back of the class who finally pushes their desk aside and says, enough, buddy, let's go at it. And did that surprise you that you did that?
Well, you know, throughout my many decades, who knew I was going to be in office this long, but nevertheless, I get to do what's important to me. But I mean, I've been a very determined person, and I have spoken out and I have put people in their place in my way throughout, but I just didn't have to sustain the sort of the confrontational vocalization that I did with Trump. And finally, when I stepped up to what we call the spray, which is a group of print people and, you know, TV people, and they sort of array themselves at the end of a hallway in the Russell Building or one of these places, and waiting for one of us to step up to the mic. So finally, I stepped up to the mic and I called Trump a liar and a misogynist, and then I've been a sexual predator. And the only thing that will save those of us that he attacks all the time is his resignation. And then I walked off. And so I think at that point, there was no turning back for my speaking out, which is, by the way, not my comfort zone, by the way, to speak up this much because I come from a culture where being confrontational, aggressive, and vocal are not rewarded, especially coming from a woman, and also my Asian culture, which is, you know, we're pretty quiet, but we do our work. So I have become more my complete self because I now give rein to my vocal cords.
The other part of that, too, and what really fires people up, and I think in a good way, at least, those of us who watch you and marvel at what you do, is that you also do this as much for the Democrats. I mean, you're critical of the Democrats as well. When President Biden last week said we're gonna stay where we are on the immigration cap, it was you and a couple others who said, "Nah, come on, you promised to do this," and then by the end of the day, he went back to that promise. So those you have. Obviously, it's different now because you have more open ears, but I assume you still have to get the voice across. You have to get the message across.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes. And so when a group of Asian leaders from the House and Tammy Duckworth and I met with the president a couple of weeks ago, he said, if there's something you don't agree with me on, you should let me know. And I definitely take him at his word. But let's just say that it is great to have a president who thinks, who listens to facts, and who takes responsibility. So, yes, we have much more listening ears. On the other hand, we have the Republican Party. We have Mitch McConnell, whose goal in life is to take back the Senate. So I feel a tremendous sense of urgency to, for example, change the filibuster law so we can get the infrastructure bill done. We can get the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act done, and we can get the John Lewis Voting Rights Act done. We can get all these things done, which I think will be pretty much stymied by the Republicans. So there's a lot to continue to speak up on, not to mention, by the way, the hundreds of voter suppression bills that are being enacted at the state legislature, and the hundreds of bills that will prevent a woman's right to choose. All of this is geared to go to a Supreme Court that a lot of these people think will be on their side. So, you know, 63 decisions, expect more of those.
Supreme Court. The name of the new book is Heart of Fire, an Immigrant Daughter's Story. Senator Mazie Hirono is our guest on the roundtable. I want to ask you, I have a lot of political questions, but I do want to get to the meat of the book, which is you write so much and so beautifully about your mom. And just the subtitle, An Immigrant Daughter's Story. So tell us about how that relationship has shaped you and really made you the person that you are, in a sense that it is to be the first in two categories in the U.S. Senate, and to be that voice, often dissenting voice, that where that comes from.
Oh, my mother was a courageous risk taker who changed my life by bringing me to this country, and Japanese women didn't do that in her time. Or if they ran away from an abusive father, who her husband, my father, who I never got to know, they ran off by themselves. They certainly wouldn't plot to figure out a way to get her three children to this country also. So she had just so much courage. And I asked her one time, was there something in your background that made you think that you could do this? And she said no, but she knew she had to do it for the sake of herself and her children. And that's where she got her determination and courage. And so I grew up watching my mother just be so self-sufficient. How could I not be affected by someone who worked so hard with no safety net? We didn't even know what a safety net was. I don't think they existed back in the day, you know? So she's just working hard. We don't have health care. And if she gets sick, there's no money, no food. And we would run out of money by the end of the month. We live really simply. So how could I not be affected by that kind of an experience of coming to this country? And also this country, not perfect, far from it, but it's worth fighting for, at least for the ideals that this country represents and that calls to so many of us.
What was her reaction to your political rise?
My mother was so unique in that she never once asked me when I was going to get married or when I was going to have children. Not once. Isn't that incredible? So one of my
God
best friends
love her.
Said, she can't be your real mother because real mothers are supposed to drive you crazy. And my mother knew she had a daughter who was going to do things differently, and she just completely supported me in every sort of unusual thing that I did. And my older brother, who was really steady, and he worked at a job and stayed there. He was really good at what he did, but he once asked my mother, when is Maisie going to get a real job? Because I would go from here and I'd do that, you know, and because maybe politics and having to run for office every 2 years is not exactly a real job.
Well, it seems like a real job.
He's come to terms with it, of course, but my mother just supported me in everything that I did, and she knew that money was not my major motivator. She knew that, and so while I went to college, she didn't tell me, well, now that you have your degree, you should go get a job somewhere. In fact, there was a time when I was offered a job, and I told her about it, and she said, I really don't think you're going to be happy in a job like that. And I said, you're right, Mom. So I didn't take the job.
Yeah.
She wanted me to find my path.
But she must have had tremendous pride.
I think so, although, like Japanese, you know, families, it's not like we're all that exuberant, but yes, she kind of beamed.
Yeah. Well, you knew.
You know what?
You felt it.
She showed me her love for me and all the different things that she did. Like, she made thousands of cards that I would give away for thank yous, and she made these wonderful, wonderful guava jellies that would take her all day, and all of that was for me, for my purposes.
There are a couple, we have just a few minutes left, and there's a couple of issues that I'd like to get to in our remaining moments. One, you mentioned voting rights and the legislation that is being, laws that are being written across this country that are, in many cases, just horrifying. So I'm curious as to your perspective on them, especially when it comes to the AAPI community. We hear a lot about the impacts on the African-American community. What do you feel the effects are in the AAPI community?
These kinds of voter suppression laws impact all communities, but especially minority communities, and that includes the AAPIs. They were very much in evidence in the Georgia elections, for example. So the AAPIs are the fastest growing minority group in our country, and they need to be paid attention to because it's not monolithic. You know, there are some 300 or plus languages spoken, some 40 plus racial groups represented in AAPIs. They are definitely a force to contend with. And the more organized they become, the better. But these kinds of voter suppression laws are so overt. The Republicans don't even try to hide their motives now.
Yeah.
They just go right out there. And when of all people, Justice Barrett asked in the case that's before them, why do you need to do this? And the person says, well, it's because, you know, if we don't do it, we will be disadvantaged against Democratic voters. So they're very overt. They actually think that the Supreme Court, since they packed it with three Trump justices, will go along with their nefarious schemes.
Well,
and I tell you, I'm very concerned about those kinds of outcomes from this court.
So, I mean, you know, we all hate to be the person who say, I told you so. But you were there from the very beginning saying, I told you so. So your questioning, your very forceful questioning, must-see TV, I would say, Senator, of your questioning of both Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Barrett during their confirmation hearings was forceful. It was hard, and it was interesting in how they responded or didn't respond to your incredible questions. What did you think the chances were there that there could be some light shed that this was not the way to go?
there was no question in my mind that the Republicans are going to just push these people through, no matter what kind of evidence was brought out, especially regarding Kavanaugh. And then, of course, the entire Amy Coney Barrett process was just totally hypocritical of the Republicans. And so we now have a court that you'll see a lot more 63 decisions. That's not good for our country, not good for the other, our courts, because you will be able to look at these decisions and recognize that they are more ideologically ideological decisions than decisions based on facts in the law. So I am all for the whole debate about court reform.
When it comes...
Otherwise...
No, court reform, meaning you put more people on the court, right?
That's one way.
Yeah.
You can put more people on the court, or you can cycle circuit court justices. You can talk about term limits, although that wouldn't impact those who are currently serving on the courts. There are a number of ways. And you certainly need to impose strong ethical conflict of interest provisions on the Supreme Court, which they don't currently have to abide by.
So we're almost 100 days into, just by a few, 100 days into the Biden administration. You've had your few scraps with them already of making sure that the president put people of color and specifically immigrants into the cabinet, and or more diverse people in senior positions in the administration, to be more accurate. So, but I would assume it is, let's celebrate something. I assume it is like night and day in dealing with this administration compared to where you were a year ago.
Oh, very much so, because this is an administration that cares, that takes responsibility, that doesn't attack anybody who doesn't agree with him, that doesn't look at the Department of Justice as his very own law firm and the Attorney General as his personal lawyer, and that there is the rule of law is going to hold sway and facts. Decisions will be made based on facts. Oh, that's novel.
Yeah. And but where do you think this is headed? You know, a lot of people will say, well, look, you know, it's you get a honeymoon phase now, next year, Republicans, whatever will happen. And maybe there could be a change in the House. I don't know. How do you look at it? How do you look at the strength of the Democratic Party, given you're looking at the tightest of margins?
When the rescue bill had to be passed without a single Republican vote, that shows that we Democrats have learned that we can't just wait around for the Republicans to say, oh, by the way, why don't we take a year to talk about the Affordable Care Act? Why don't we take a year to talk about the infrastructure? No, we have learned that we need to get on with things and with a sense of urgency. And so I don't know that there's been a honeymoon. We had to pass the rescue bill using a process called reconciliation. There was no Mitch McConnell, who, by the way, he could say tomorrow, we're going to work with the Democrats. We're going to get things done on behalf of the people of our country. He could say that tomorrow and it would happen. Yes, there would be the holdouts, the usual suspects that you know as well as I.
Right.
But he won't do that because that will not enable him to take back the Senate.
Well, your book is Heart of Fire. It is we've been talking a lot of politics this morning, but it is such a beautiful and poignant story, and I recommend it to people who just want to know more about you. It's just lovely, and I can't thank you enough for being on the show and taking time out to be with us.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your work.
I
enjoyed it.
Be well. Thank you very much.
Yes, everyone stay safe. Be kind.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Mazie Hirono is a United States senator. The name of the new book is Heart of Fire, an Immigrant Daughter's Story. It is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.